That I loved, I romanced, I lived with. Now I bow down because the way she exited the body, it's not a simple thing.
All the footwear outside, and I took off my slippers, and I remember seeing all the people there as well, many people inside, everybody was crying, and I remember walking in and I saw my father sitting kind of across. He must have spoken to me or said something. But what I remember clearly from that night is I remember hugging him, and I remember holding a lot of people and my clothes getting wet from people crying. But I wasn't. I don't know, it was the next morning when I saw everybody and everything was done. Then I kind of it kind of settled that it was over.
All her life, she was very proud that I am her husband. Today, I have to say that I am extremely proud that I happen to be her husband.
Watch Vichy, Victory's Daughter, streaming only on Sadhguru Exclusive.
Today is referred to as Thaipusam in the Tamil culture, which is considered to be the most effervescent of the various spiritual events that this culture is full of. Literally, every day of the 365 days are marked for different aspects of life. But this day, which is the first Purnami or the full moon day, post solstice, after Sankranti, the first full moon day is called as Thaipusam. Largely in the country, in the larger part of the country, it is known as the Dhanya Purnami. Dhanya means it is a full moon of fulfillment. In many ways, because of the nature of what happens on this planet in relationship with the sun, this is considered to be the most generous full moon of the year. When I say generous, one who knows how to get the best out of life, one who is seeing how to make this life in the best possible way, one will attain to maximum amount of, or one will reap maximum harvest at this time. So it's called as Dhanya Purnami, the full moon of fulfillment. The moon has already come up in a glorious way. There are many things connected with this. This is considered also in southern India largely. For ages, people always saw this as a day to develop instruments of victory, that which brings you victory, success. In material world, in the emotional world, and in the spiritual world, this is the day when one hones their instruments which will bring success or victory in these different dimensions. The legend goes out to say that it is on this day that Parvati gave the veil or the spear to Skanda, who is known as Muruga in the south. He is Skanda, he is Kumara, he is Subramanya, and he is Muruga. Different geographies called him differently, but started as Skanda. So with this instrument or this… with this weapon of a spear, he got the fame of being the greatest warrior ever. Fought across the subcontinent. It is said he went beyond the present borders of what we call as Bharat, because his name reverberated in the Persian culture as Iskanda. Went further north up into Central Asia and become Iskandar. And even today the word slightly mispronounced is used as Sikandar, somebody who is victorious over everybody, who becomes an emperor of all the rulers, but never held a kingdom. He only fought battles because he was committed to annihilating injustice. The boy was angry and when somebody of immense capabilities and hugely blessed becomes angry, so it happened, and wherever he thought there is injustice, he started killing. Well, literally his adolescence and youth, as a youth, he largely killed people. We don't know how many, but across the subcontinent he did, and he also went slightly out. Then he realized, what is justice and what is injustice is not always an absolute. It's a question of perspective most of the time. Then he realized that somewhere deep inside, the fury of who he was is seeking revenge in the form of justice. When you go after somebody thinking you will serve justice, they will only experience it as revenge. So I'm not trying to say there is no justice at all, but there isn't. The world, human life, always balances between. We work for either the larger good of the people or larger harm to the people. Never in the history of humanity have we achieved that kind of a thing where there was absolute justice. We've only talked about it. We never have managed to manifest it. In small societies, you may, but as the size grows, it only becomes about larger well-being. Larger well-being will always be perceived by a certain group of people as injustice to them. Endlessly, in every society, in every little place, this is going on. Even within a home where there are four or five people, somebody will always be feeling there is injustice towards them, however you do it. Because there is no absolute definition of what is justice. The largest well-being that we can serve even a given group of people is the only justice we have managed till now. When he realized this, he washed his sword and his spear and went up the mountain and left his body because he knew he was fighting for a goal which is not just elusive, which is illusive. Having said that, only if you realize this in your life, that life is not a bundle of absolutes, then there is possibility of fulfillment. Then you will ask, Sadhguru, are you saying only corrupt people will find fulfillment? That is the human struggle. When you employ one dimension of intelligence, that dimension of intelligence which we consider as intellect always looks for straight lines. When it does not find straight lines in any aspect of life, it will feel it's unjust. Another level of intelligence which is not within the straight lines, which cannot be bound within straight lines, feels perfectly comfortable with small discrepancies. It is okay with the order that we see in a forest. But a logical mind will seek a manicured garden everywhere and will be disappointed, because manicured garden is only possible in small patches, never possible as a global phenomena. So that is Skanda's story, but he got his weapon of instrument, according to the legend, on this day. That is why he was so successful in his mission. Well, ultimately he came to realization that his mission was not right, but that is also considered victory in this culture. Anywhere else he would be rated as a failure because he failed in his mission. But in this culture, which is not of straight lines, we see this as a success because he realized. In his activity in the world, he failed, but he realized. We hold that as the greatest success, not material things. If he had listed this many victories and if his mission was complete, only then an intellectually constipated society would consider him a success. But here, he failed, absolutely failed in his mission, but he is a success for us. All over southern India, we worship the boy more than his father. Today, everybody is at the Muruga temple. Because realization, which is not confined within the definitions of human logic, is considered the highest success. On this day, 24 years ago, one of us, became victorious in her journey. It was a loss for all of us, particularly for me and my girl, it was a big loss. But we still consider it a success, this is our problem. A massive loss, but because it was a success for that life, any life for that matter, a life doesn't belong to anybody. As body, we may say this is parented by these people, this is married to this person or that person, or born to this person or that person, or fathered or mothered this person or that person. But as a life, we don't belong to anybody. As a body, we belong to somebody maybe, but as a life, we don't belong to anybody. So in that context, it has been one of the greatest victories that has happened here, though it was a great loss for us. This is a day which is considered as the best day to start one's pilgrimage. Pilgrimage always meant a journey in which you'll obliterate yourself. Once again, our idea of victory is we are obliterated. Our idea of victory is not piling up people and sitting on top of their heads. Our idea of victory is to obliterate ourselves, to dissolve ourselves, because this is a land of devotion. The object of devotion is only dissolution. We may use another object as a means to dissolve, but the fundamental objective is to dissolve. Well, does it mean to say this is a culture committed to failure? No. Because within the framework of one's intellect, if once it's there, once it's here, once it's here, you would think he is low, this is medium, this is high. But we always understood in this culture the planet is round and it's spinning, your ideas of what is low, what is medium, what is high, you're totally messed up in your head. You don't have a larger perspective of life. You are counting the steps that you climb because you're horribly identified with a little bit of earth that you gathered in the form of your flesh and bone. Because of that, your perspective is all messed up. This is a day where people start a pilgrimage, particularly in Tamil Nadu, because pilgrimage means we have started the process to dissolve ourselves, wear ourselves down in every possible way. People walk hundreds of miles. There is still a vibrant culture of pilgrimage here, that people walk hundreds of miles to get to the… generally to the Murugan temple in Tamil Nadu, but various kinds happening across southern India. Because according to the position of the planet, we have recognized whatever we do within ourselves for our inner well-being finds results much more easily during this time. As I said, this is a generous or a benevolent time during the 12 or 13 month cycle. I say 12 or 13 because there is a solar cycle and there is a lunar cycle. Solar cycle generally works for us with a 12 as a basic calculation. It can be further divided, but 12 works for us. As lunar cycle, it is 13. Whichever culture went against everything that's feminine, labeled 13 as a bad luck number. They're calling you all bad luck. Yes. Generally, unfortunately, women were considered inauspicious, not allowed to read the sacred book, not allowed to do any sacrament. But this is a culture where we worship the woman. And here there are women who are completely bossing the temple. It's their temple, men cannot enter. They can, but they can't go into the sanctum. Because this whole idea of what is superior, what is inferior, comes because you're applying one dimension of your intelligence to everything. One dimension of seat is like this. You just have a foot scale. This is your only measure. So now, what is big, what is small? With this, okay, this one is 5 feet tall, that one is 6 feet tall, so that is a big man, this is a small woman, this is this, this is that. But now we got some other quantity. Let's say we got a liter of milk. You went there and with a foot scale, we spilled the milk. Now you measured nicely and said, this is 10 meters of milk. The 10 meter of milk can be stretched to 100 meters if we want. So there are different dimensions to life. For everything you have one measuring scale. Because of that, something becomes inferior, something becomes superior, something sacred, something filthy. Now, here, either everything is sacred, this is one way, or everything is filthy, that is also another way. If you do the filthy way, you can't be in the social sphere of life. So better see everything as sacred. This is why we, you know, go see Devi, this only. Whatever temple you go, this only. If you see human beings, this only. If you see a cow, this only. An elephant, this only. Rock, this only. A tree, this only. Because we are not looking at life from the limitations of our intellect, which unfortunately today has become the only window that we open through our education systems. So Devi is a tremendous opportunity. She is made in such a way, she's wonky. She drives you crazy for no reason. You step inside not knowing why, tears will flow, you're quite fine. Nothing wrong with you. Well, if life did not overwhelm you and bring even a drop of tear in your eyes, there is something seriously wrong with you, you better know that. Yes. If life doesn't overwhelm you, why the hell are you here? Oh, maybe you want to go to heaven and then be overwhelmed. All the best. So the period of sadhana here, in during this phase, produces maximum results. Because of this, Bhairavi sadhana, this time because she has completed her 11-year cycle. If you did not know her phone number, it is 11. So because of this, there are many aspects, because solar cycle is 12 years. What is beyond 12 belongs to Shiva. What is below 12 belongs to Devi. Oh, Shiva's got more numbers. No, that's not how it is. No, because there are some feminists. I want you to understand, this is ultimate feminism. This is ultimate feminism where a woman and all the processes of her body are worshipped, not seen as high and low. So why 11 is? Probably this is not yet well established in the modern sciences, but in the yogic science, the material dimensions of the world, the material dimensions of creation are in 11 dimensions. Everything that's material is 11. If it moves to the 12th dimension, it starts dissolving into becoming non-material or non-physical in nature. So what is beyond 12 is Shiva's realm. Shiva means that which is not. So beyond 12, it is no more physical, it is that which is not. What is below 12 is 11, so this is that which is. So Devi is consecrated in a way that everything that we do with her is 11. You see, even her Trishulam is at 11 o'clock. We are located at 11 degrees latitude. All these things have fallen well together. The way space and time is conceptualized in the form of material manifestation of creation, even in modern science, is moving towards, theoretical physics is moving towards clearly saying there are 11 brains or 11 membranes or 11 universes or trans-universes. Beyond that is non-physical dimensions. Still there is existence, but not particular in nature, not material in nature. The deepest trench that you find in the oceans of this world is 11 kilometers, because the design of what happens in the creation is based on certain fundamentals. One thing manifests in one way, everything else is related to that. There is something called as a constructional theory that they have gone into these days, and they are clearly saying the design of an atom and the design of the cosmos are same. The fundamental design of an amoeba and that of a human being is the same. Only the complexity and sophistication has multiplied manifold over, so it looks so different, but fundamentally it is the same thing. So because of this, in the material world, so many things hang around number 11, because that is the dimension we are representing as Devi. To find success and victory in the material world, if you transit from this, go into 12, we are only thinking of mukti, that is being liberated from the material world. I always feared when I consecrated 11 years ago, and that day itself I said, I have a fear in my heart that she will become more popular than him. It is happening already. As a part of regular… I mean, sorry, as a part of regulating her popularity, we are doing a bit of a lockdown for the last few years for her, not just for the virus, even before. We are closing down the Devi temple for a period of time. This period may increase as she becomes more popular, because we don't want people to be more focused on material victory than ultimate victory in their lives. They need to Come, temple is closed, so at least then they go and sit in dhyana. This is a land, this is a culture which has prospered and has been the greatest success for the longest period of time in the history of humanity, not based on its organizational skills, but based on unfolding of individual genius. We have produced magnificent human beings, the kind of human beings that gods would be envious of, so many. So the success of whatever we did has always been because genius opened up very generously, because we figured out how life gets to its best. In this process of unfolding human genius, the energy manifestation that we refer to as Devi Bhairavi today is a significant aspect that one can use this to unfold the variety of capabilities that a human being is capable of. Everything that any human being knows, who is living or who are gone by, everything that any human being ever knew could become a living source of knowing for you, if only if you open up certain windows within you. Now I'm not talking about the Microsoft product, I'm talking about, okay, doors. Nobody's using that as a brand, okay? Doors. Not yet, I think. You can open up different doorways within your perceptional world where many, many, many aspects of life which got invested in different people in little parts of knowing never came together. If they had come together, something else would have happened for humanity. But if it comes together in any one human being, then what happens around there is incredible and fantastic. It's hard to believe that it's true. To that extent it can go. That is what the potential of Devi is, that is the potential of Bhairavi. How to access this dimension? Well, we could create more complex and sophisticated methods which will need enormous mental focus and energetic capabilities, but the second cycle of our life, the second 11 years now that we are starting from today, best way to go right now is with utter devotion. Devotion means, once again, as I already said, the object of devotion is dissolution. What can you dissolve? You're not planning to dissolve the body. Everything that you consider as myself, what you consider as myself right now is a bundle of likes, dislikes, hates, loves, wows and pukes. I'm using the social media language. If you dissolve all this and you're able to just see life, feel and experience life just the way it is, not the way you think it is, well, you will become available to her grace. One who has accessed this grace will live here in such a way that other people will think you're superhuman. As I've repeatedly said, this whole thing is not about being superhuman. It's about realizing that being human is super, because in this culture there is no superhuman being. It is only human beings rising to become godlike. Human beings who are born like you and me, no special birth, ordinary, regular delivery of their mothers, painful as usual, go through all the trials and tribulations of life and still rise to a place where everyone sees them as divine. This is what you need to understand. All the people that you worship, whether it is Krishna, Rama, Shiva, Muruga, all of them walked this geography, went through all the pains and struggles of life, but today when you look at them, you think they are godlike. This is very important that we don't drop them from the heavens, because it's very important that they remain an inspiration for you to aspire for that, rather than just nailing them to the wall and becoming worshipful of them. They live as living inspirations. But did Devi walk this geography? No. We made her up. When I say we made her up, we understood the technology of God-making, not just as an emotional tool, but as an energy manifestation which has magnificent proportions to it. See, today you have built an airplane, let's say. An airplane would have been an impossible thing just 500 years ago, even a concept. Even conceptually, it would be difficult for the rest of the world. So, though conceptually it was here, that doesn't matter. Let us say anything like that, it would be out of the world. But we built a mechanism with which now everybody can fly. Though, because of the virus, it's not the safest thing to do right now. So a magical thing like this, you know, I've been involved in aviation since I was 12-13 years of age. First the disastrous attempt to build a hang glider and fly, which cost me some bones. And then proper hang glider built by somebody and flying that, and then motorized hang gliders, then of course commercial flights, and then now we have a, you know, a rotary wing license to fly. So I've been engaged with aviation literally almost all my life. So I've observed this. Even though I might not have put in thousands of hours of actual flying, I've observed this and observed this, whether it's a bird or an insect. One aspect of my observation is always about how it flies. It always fascinated me, how is the damn thing flying, because I couldn't. Because today I see when you sit in an airport, most people are bored and sitting there because they have to wait for 3-4 hours or whatever, there are delays in the flights. I'm always sitting in a place where I can see the tarmac where they're landing and taking off. I must have seen, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of landings and taking offs in my life. But even today, I get goosebumps the moment this machine takes off, because tons of metal and people and baggage and whatever else, the way it flies off, it's still magic. Magic is not gone out of it just because it's flying every day. Still it is magic. If the first plane, if you saw flying, you would think, you know, most fantastic thing you witnessed. How come? Because it's a millionth plane, you lost it. No, still the same magic is happening. Your ability to experience the magic is gone, unfortunately, because you are not living out of consciousness, you're living out of your silly memory. I'm calling memory silly, not because memory is silly, because you are making an attempt to make the dead memory live. That is silly. Raising the dead. People, this is, you know, especially when I'm, these days they have stopped. But initially when I went to certain places to speak, first question was, can you raise the dead? And why would I do such a stupid thing? Already the damn place is crowded. If you raise all the dead, I want you to just imagine. You are thinking, yes, yes, if my mother came back, if my grandmother came back, it's nice. But if everybody's grandmothers and grandfathers came back, whoa, it's the greatest disaster. So this raising the dead business comes from a very, very adolescent culture, juvenile, because you think it's the greatest miracle. No, it is the silliest thing you can do is raise the dead. The miracle is that you keep this alive and you keep this well. This is a miracle. Hello? See, you eat a chapati. The chapati doesn't look like you, does it? No, even if you're size zero, it doesn't look like you. It doesn't smell like you, it doesn't taste like you, but it becomes you. This is a miracle. You have no eyes for real miracles that are happening all the time. But you want some silly miracle like this. No, that's not what she will do. She will make you overflow with life. So overflowing with life, if you have to die today, you will go willingly. Not that you're wanting to die, you're living. You're living not because you want to live, because you kept this well, you're living. It's not your desire which gives you victory, it's your competence which gives you victory, always. So she is very much in tune with that. She doesn't care what your desires are. She's looking at how to make you competent for this life and beyond. And that's important. If you have no competence, you have desire, all you will get is frustration halfway down the life. This is what they call as midlife crisis, because they have desires, no competence. They have desire to live joyfully, full of love. Midlife crisis is usually not only with the profession, usually it involves the family, relationships, all this. So I'm saying they want to be super successful by the time they're 35. They want to be in a great state of love and romance. None of those things are happening. They're in a midlife crisis simply because they're not competent either to love. With the attitudes they have, who can love them? Poor dog is the only one competent. Somehow he's made like that because, you know, God and dog are so closely connected. No, I'm saying at least in spelling. So, somehow that poor dog is so competent, whatever kind of idiot you are, it's still loving. However crude you are, however nonsensical you are, still it is loving. People are expecting their husbands and wives to be as competent as a dog. No. There is no one human being anywhere who, when it comes to simply loving, because I see everywhere people say, "Sadhguru, can we have unconditional love?" I said, "Become a dog." He's already achieved it, I'm saying. If you are a human being, unfortunately, there are conditions and conditions and conditions and conditions. Hello? The conditions or no? The conditions. If you can rise a little above that, then you will see your love is of a different nature, because you have enough awareness to realize love is not about somebody. Love is not some kind of an action. Love is the way you are. You have made your emotional dimension of your life very, very sweet. If you look at a man, you're loving. If you look at a woman, you're loving. If you look at this pole, you're loving. Even this fat guy, where is he? Him also you're loving, and even the cobra you're loving. If you close your eyes, you just overflowing with love. You understand human experience comes from within. In that sense, devotion is a powerful tool that you dissolve all this. What you think is me, what you think is your persona or your personality is essentially a bundle of likes, dislikes, prejudices, loves and hates, wows and pukes. No, I don't want to, you know, because we are online, there are people who live there. I'm trying to bring them down so that they can meet Devi here in reality. But that's why we are beaming online also, so that they can at least experience it a little bit online. We'll leave it there. If there are any questions, please. I heard there are lots of questions.
Namaskaram, Sadhguru. Sadhguru, you are talking about liberating the Hindu temples from the clutches of the government. sorry, so if...
Are you opposing me?
Sorry?
Are you opposing that?
No.
No, okay.
So you're talking about liberating the Hindu temples from the clutches of the government. Sorry, I'm not sure how to ask you this question without it coming across in the wrong way. So you're talking about... In case this does happen, I understand that anybody can be a part of the management, the management can be done by anybody, but who should actually be in touch with the deity? Do the Brahmins have to come back here again? Is this the only way that you can run a temple?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am not talking about it. I'm just trying to translate what is written in the constitution as to how any spiritual, or if you want to call it religious spaces, should be managed or run. The fundamental rights in the country and in most parts of the world, almost every democratic nation, everybody can run their spiritual and religious institutions the way they want. Those who want will go there. Those who don't want will not go there. So should a particular community come back? See, we must understand in this country, communities were formed on the basis of profession. If you are a carpenter, you are one kind of achari. If you are a goldsmith, you are another kind of achari. If you are a blacksmith, you are another kind of achari. If you are a trader, you are one kind of vaishya. If you are an agriculturist, you are another kind. If you are a ruling class, you know, if you are a militant class, you are one kind. So based on professions, communities happened over a period of time. It is not that there was no transmigration, people could go. It is over a period of time where, unfortunately, people will perceive differences as discrimination and use it as a tool of exploitation. So if the Hindu temples, if you are saying, I'm saying they must be liberated, Hindu temples must be liberated because because one important aspect of this is, it never belonged to a particular religion, it belonged to a particular trait. Devi temples are made one way, Shiva temples are made another way, Krishna temples are made another way, Vishnu temples are all in one way, Brahma temples in different ways, and all the different kinds of devis, they are made differently. These were all energy centers established for different purposes. According to your purpose, whoever you are, you could go there. And according to its nature, different class of people manage different types of temples. Over a period of time, for the maintenance of the temple, by the devotees constantly contributing to the temple, temple's wealth grew. As the wealth grew, slowly certain communities tried to kind of dominate that, because there was so much money and so much wealth, so naturally certain people dominated that. Well, in the British era, you must understand this, the Hindu temples were not taken over by the British Empire. It was taken over by a corporate called East India Company. A business took over the temples. Why was… you think the business was interested in your religion? No. Because they saw there was so much wealth, they decided they must take it. In 1840, because these temples were managed by the English people, resistance rose in the Christian community, both back home for them and also here, that Christian men are managing pagan temples and we cannot condone that. So they decided to hand it back. By then they had shaved off all the jewelry, this, that. They were not… they couldn't take the land to England, so they took only what could be moved. Some temples escaped this, most temples lost their gold and diamond and everything that they had in huge quantities because people went on contributing. Only when some emergency like a famine or something came, it was for the temple to decide how much it should spend on those situations. Anyway, that's a history thing. Now if we release it, should the Brahmins come back? Not at all. Right now, there is no such thing, only a particular caste should become a carpenter, only a particular person should become a jeweler. All kinds of people are becoming jewelers, all kinds of people are doing jewelry design today because there is a college to train them. Similarly, we must establish institutions where we will train people. What should happen in a Shiva temple? What should happen in a Krishna temple? What should happen in a Vishnu temple? What should happen in a Devi temple? So, whoever learns the process and passes the examination, they will run the temple. Well, right here at Isha Yoga Center, this is a classic example. Here the Bhairavi Devi, a stringent training process, because this has a certain level of ritual involved, only women can do it. Men are only in the outskirts of the temple. They cannot go in because that's the nature of the consecration. Here in the Dhyanalinga temple, one half of the month, the lunar month, men manage it. Another half of the lunar month, women manage it. But they're all brahmacharis, both ways. They're all ash people, because he is ash. That is, beyond the 12 number, he is like that. Now there's a Kala Bhairava temple coming up. You will see there will be totally a different breed of people managing that. Yes, because that serves not only the living, that is built to serve the dead. So that needs a completely different kind of involvement, it's different kind of competence to manage that. And even in terms of who comes into the temple, see here, People of all kinds of religions, caste, creed, everybody's coming, nobody checks who is who, because we are not interested who your father was. We are only interested where you want to go. This is the fundamental of democracy, I'm telling you. The fundamental of democracy is, we are not interested who your father was, we are only interested who you are. That's democracy. That is the basis of spirituality. We don't care who your father was or your grandfather was, whatever he might have been. What are you? Where do you want to go? This is all the concern of a spiritual process. So temples were not places of worship. Temples were not places where one man leads the prayer and everybody follows what he says. It never was. Priest only conducted a process. He's just there to facilitate. He's never ruling the place. He's never dominating the place. He's never giving a teaching. Nobody ever gives a teaching or philosophy or any kind of stirring up of the society. This is very important for the future of the world. So do not just call them Hindu temples. They are really temples where human beings can transform themselves. Human beings can nourish themselves for their inner development. So right now, I'm saying even mosques and churches and everything should become like this. Let us say I like one aspect of what they're doing in a mosque. Why can't I go there? No, it's all segmented now. You can only go here, they can only go there. Fortunately, we've changed this completely. Here, there are a whole lot of people coming. Many ladies coming, burqa clad ladies, they like Dhyanalinga, they like to sit there. Bhairavi is probably too ritualistic for them, they just look like this and go away. But they like Dhyanalinga, they come there. Many come only for the Tirth Kund, you know, the Surya Kund and the Chandra Kund. It is fine with us. We don't force anybody to go here. This is a certain kind. This needs a different kind of involvement. That needs a different kind of involvement. As long as a human being is willing to follow the basic norms for which it is set up, basic purpose for which it is set up, and basic norms which facilitate that purpose, any human being should be allowed not only to enter the place, also to be in the sanctum. If somebody who is born as a whatever nonsense, high class, low, high caste, low caste, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jew, you know, Sikh, whatever, if they are drawn to a certain aspect, and if they are willing to go through the necessary preparatory steps, today it can be established as an institution. You must understand, what was institutions has all been painted negatively as some kind of caste system. Now, institutions which trained blacksmiths have become blacksmith caste. It's an institution. Unfortunately, somehow the goldsmith people started propagating that goldsmiths are superior to blacksmiths. Though you cannot live without a blacksmith in a society, you can very well live without a goldsmith. Yes. So this superiority, inferiority business is something that's happened later on. The temple never had that. See, temple means it is trying to make a certain dimension of life which is crossing the boundaries of one's physical nature available to people, available for people to experience that dimension. If you cross the boundaries of physicality, you have crossed all boundaries and divisions that you have created in the world in the name of caste, creed, gender, nonsense, all kinds of nonsense. We have… see, all these things have happened in many temples. They don't allow foreigners. See, there was a time where in India there were boards, Indians and dogs are not allowed into this place. So in reaction, you put it up in your temple, foreigners not allowed. This was your little reaction. And also it was true, people came in just to desecrate the temple. They come in… there are any number of incidents where they come inside and they want to spit in the temple, any number of incidents where intentionally they want to urinate in the temple, those were the times of occupation. That is gone. Today, if somebody who is not born in India wants to come into the temple, they're coming in because they genuinely want to come, not to desecrate it, not to dishonor it. They're really coming because they want to experience it. So, nationality, gender, caste, creed, nothing matters, because this is a dimension, temple is a dimension where you transact with that which is beyond your physical nature. This is open to every human being, not only for management, not only for use, also to be in touch with the sanctum sanctorum, it is open to everybody. I would like to see that there used to be, there were mass here who are African in origin. Now there are people from all over, some from United States, some from India. I would like to see every kind, maybe Chinese, Japanese, this, that, works, everything. It's important. This is important not just for the temple, this is important for humanity, that without discrimination, everybody can aspire to grow. Everybody can aspire to touch dimensions beyond the limitations of who we are right now. This is the reason why I'm asking for liberating the temple for government clutches, because they're still hanging on to a nasty part of the history which was there. It's time to eradicate that and build a grand future. Whoa. 8 o'clock, they're closing this off, right? Yes. There is something called as time and space. Right now there is space, but there is no time. What is that?
Is exoneration possible?
Exoneration of what?
If we have committed a sin deliberately, can we get rid of
it? It's okay. Hello, we heard the question. Looks like you didn't hear the first part of the talk at all. This is a land of karma, not of sin and virtue. You can do whatever you want with your life, as long as you are willing to face the consequence joyfully. You do things, when consequences come, you will cry. That's not okay. Do whatever the hell you want. But when the consequence comes, you must be able to bear it joyfully, then you're exonerated. Here we have you know, we have, for those of you who are new,
The Grace of Yoga is a powerful yoga program with Sadhguru to cleanse your system physically and energetically. The program is available online in 3-day and 1-day formats. Participants will have the rare opportunity to imbibe powerful tools for the purification of the 5 elements from Sadhguru. Participants can also join the exclusive Panchabhuta Kriya offered by Sadhguru via web stream.
It is our endeavor to create various devices here which will allow people to make this happen for themselves in such a way that the very way you exist is a Panchabhuta Kriya. One can use this for physical well-being, for their worldly success. At the same time, it can be a great stepping stone for one's ultimate liberation too.